on CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome to the jungle. We start hour number two on this Tuesday. We are coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. Whether you want to buy a home or refinance your current home, Rocket can. Here I am, the new guy. It was only one day off. And as I mentioned last hour, I had an excused absence. I had jury duty. And they released me before the end of the first day. They released me before lunch. Dear Mr. Rome.
Yeah.
Actually, people did break out in applause when they made the announcement. Dear Mr. Rome. Boom. Out of here. Regards the jury selection
Boom.
Team.
Hey. Out of here.
JP and Riverside, there actually was no selection team. We did not go in front of any attorney. We didn't have to talk to anybody. She said, again, we had a case this morning. It looked like it was going to happen, but then both sides settled. Therefore, quote, you are all free to leave. Your jury obligations are now complete. And I'm like, wait, what? Never mind. Hell yeah. You are not the juror. It's like a Maury episode for me. Yeah, I'm not saying that I don't want to perform my civic duty. I would have. But when she got up behind that mic and said, you are all free to leave, I thought that I'd been on a segment of Maury and found out that I was not the father. Juror. As promised. All right, so more on that a little bit later on. And because I was not here yesterday, there were some amazing things that went down over the weekend that I would go back to. Normally on a Tuesday, we're not looking back. But because I was not here yesterday, we will look back. However, we are looking forward right now. I'm joined by a broadcaster and an analyst for NHL Network, ESPN, and TSN. More than 14 years in professional hockey. He helped lead the Carolina Hurricanes to the 2002 Stanley Cup Final. He was a second-round pick back in 1993. He will be on ESPN2's call for the Caps and Panthers Game 5 tomorrow, 7:30 p.m. Remember, NHL Network is airing live coverage before and after every single game with NHL Now and NHL Tonight. Kevin Weeks is my guest. Kevin, there is no better time of year to talk to you than this time of year, my man. How you living? How you feeling?
Feeling great, Romy. What about you? The Derby's over, so how are you doing now that the Derby's passed?
Man, that was an amazing thing. I haven't even gotten to it yet today, Kevin, like I mentioned, because, 80-1, because I was not here yesterday, so it was an amazing thing to see. I'm going to get into that later on, but let me ask you about the postseason. Like, we know this. The NHL postseason really is the ultimate war of attrition. If you look at tonight's action alone, Kevin, of the four series tonight, all four are tied up at two games apiece. So when you look at tonight's action, can you give me a storyline or two that you're most focused on heading into this evening?
Yeah, I would say what we thought would have been the most compelling series, maybe in all of pro sports in the postseason, in Minnesota and the St. Louis Blues. That's living up to the billing now, especially the last two games. Two outstanding teams, ton of star power, ton of superstar power. The Minnesota Wild have Kirill Kaprizov, who's one of the best players on the planet. But I like their team in general. They've got a lot of depth. And then in the case of the St. Louis Blues, I'd say about 75% of their team was there when they won the Stanley Cup a couple years back against the Boston Bruins. Chief Berube is doing a great job behind the bench. Vladimir Tarasenko is healthy for them once again. Jordan Kyrou is a budding star, so is Robert Thomas. So I love that matchup. That series is great. And then another one that I'll focus on is the Toronto Maple Leafs and the Tampa Bay Lightning. Coming in, smart money would have said the Lightning would have probably won this one in five or six, although the Leafs had a record-breaking season for them. But we know that their postseason history has been very challenging back in my hometown of Toronto, let's put it that way, outside of the Raptors. So that's really compelling, the fact that it's 2-2, that Tampa evened up that series in Game 4. I played exceptionally well back in Tampa, so it shifts to Toronto tonight.
Kevin Weeks joining us. I'm glad you mentioned those two series because I was going to ask you specifically about those two. I mean, when you look at Toronto and Tampa Bay, you've got the two-time defending champs, the Lightning. They're in a dogfight. As you mentioned, Toronto is so hungry because it's been so long. It's a fascinating matchup. In your mind, Kevin, what's the longer shot? The Lightning pulling off the three-peat or the Maple Leafs finally snapping their cup drought? And how do you see the rest of that series playing out?
I'd say the longer shot, the Leafs finally snapping the cup drought, because it goes back to 1967. And I know it well, of course, having grown up there. So I would say for Tampa, the three-peat is a near impossibility, but if there's anybody that can do it, it's them. They've got all the pieces. They're battle-tested. They've got the recipe book of what it takes to win the Stanley Cup. Their repeat champ, Patty Maroon, is a three-peat because he won it with St. Louis and then won two in Tampa. He's the only person on planet Earth that's had a three-peat the last 3 years, I think, in the world of major professional sports. So he's got a chance for a four-piece to hit him with a Kit Kat. But I love Tampa's team. The Leafs have come so far, I got to say. Auston Matthews out of Arizona. He's one of the best players in the world. For me, he's the most complete player in the world. I love Auston Matthews' game. The Leafs certainly are led by him and Mitch Marner, but Tampa's got the recipe. So if I'm saying the longer shot, it's the Leafs getting out of the first round.
All right, Kevin Weeks joining us. You mentioned Auston Matthews, so let me ask you this. The nominees for the Hart Trophy were announced last week. All eyes, of course, are on Auston Matthews and Connor McDavid. You just said Matthews is the most complete player you think right now. So is it McDavid's hardware to lose, or can you make an argument for Matthews?
I can make a strong argument for Matthews, and that's no slight to Connor McDavid. I think overall, Connor McDavid, no question, last 5 years has been the best player in the league. But Auston Matthews, to me, is now the most complete player in the league, and he scores the most. He's the best goal scorer on the planet in our league. So all that to say, he's also rounded out his game. When you're the best goal scorer and you put up a 60 spot for the first time in Toronto Maple Leafs history for an original six franchise, and you're good defensively, and you're good in the faceoff circle, and you can make plays, I don't know, man. That's an all-rounder for me. So I look at him. He's a real unicorn in his own way. I give him the slight nod, but also don't sleep on Igor Shesterkin from the Rangers, their goalie here in New York. Had not for Shesterkin, there's no way the Rangers have anywhere near the season they did. He stole a lot of wins for them this season.
We're talking to Kevin Weeks. You know, Kevin, you said, and to your point, that the three-peat is more likely than Toronto actually getting their name on the cup. But can you imagine if and when that were to ever happen? It's been since 1967. If Matthews is the guy to get them there, I mean, can you imagine the icon and legend that he would be? Can you explain this, like, Kevin? It's such a different thing, Toronto, yeah. Montreal, in these Canadian cities. But if you were to isolate Toronto, can you explain what it's like to live and play there for those athletes and the pressure that comes along with being a part of an original six franchise that has not won at all since 67?
Yeah, let me tell you, right, like, and growing up there, even in youth hockey, like minor hockey, 8, 9, 10 years old, peewee, you name it, like, we'd have 1,000 people on a Friday night at our games.
Wow.
Like, we had scouts coming out to watch us at 11, 12 years old, NHL scouts, pro, college, you name it, junior. So that's how you know how much of a hotbed it is. It literally is like, it's a hot pot. It's like a big hot crock pot or a pot of chili. And the pressure is that way since you're kids, let alone now for these guys playing at the Leafs, you know, for the Leafs at the NHL level. I look back at the Raptors and what my man Masai Ujiri did with the Raps. Him leading them to the Larry O'B is beyond incredible. And there were 2.5 million people at that parade. And for any of the listeners that know, you know, we have Caravana every summer. I'm Caribbean. My parents are from Barbados. So we have Caravana every summer, the big Caribbean festival up there. And the parade does about 1.5-1.6 million people, okay? The Raptors almost double that. If the Leafs win, there could very well be about 4+ million people in the parade, literally. I think it might end up being the biggest parade in the history of professional sports, if and or when they ever win a Stanley Cup. But, yeah, the pressure is immense. Everybody lives and breathes the game, lives and dies the game. So it's a unique opportunity. As my man Tim Grover said, pressure is a privilege. So they've earned that privilege. They've had a record-setting season, not only individually with the likes of the great Auston Matthews, but team-wise, it's a big opportunity for them. They've got a great chance to vanquish the repeat Stanley Cup champs.
So, Kevin, you just name-checked two of my favorite guys, and that should probably come as no surprise to you. I love Masai. I haven't talked to Masai in a while, but I'm not sure what impressed me more, the fact that the Raptors won the Larry O, or that my guy Masai was like the last remaining celebrity on a BlackBerry. I was fascinated by both those things. What about Grover? Do you know, yeah. Are you connected to Grover as a fellow keynote guy, or have you worked out with him or both?
No, I connected with him. I've always followed him from afar, and then, of course, social media became a thing, and it's, you know, it's advanced to what it is now. So it's kind of amplified connectivity. So I've gotten a chance to meet him and his agent, Sherry Wank, had some lunch with them in Chicago. I've been in touch with them both. I think they're doing transformative things. They're doing a lot of what we do in the world of professional sports, but that's not necessarily seen by everyday folks and in everyday life per se, or it's not identified as much. So TG and Attack Athletics. He's the man. Sherry's awesome. They're great at what they do. Tim's the best on the planet. So I'm very happy to call him a friend and to call them both a friend going forward. I love everything that they're doing right now. Winning. It's all about winning. And as I told you, we learned that at 8 years old, 6 years old playing. And you don't only win on the playing surface, but we win in everyday life as well. So that's why I think he's been amazing. He's doing awesome.
He is. He, Grover and Sherry, I know them both. They're both intense. Yep. They're both a force. And I know exactly what you're talking about. Kevin Weeks is joining us. Kevin, before you go, you were on game one of the Avs and Preds. Colorado was the first to advance. Overall, are they the ones to beat?
I think in the West, I'm splitting atoms between Colorado and Calgary. Calgary has been money so far this year as well, all season long. And they played a playoff game style all season long under Daryl Sutter, bringing those two rings from the LA Kings that he got in that year in there. I'd say in the case of Colorado Avalanche, they're so dynamic. They can attack you in so many different ways with their speed, with their tempo. Cale Makar, for me, is the best defenseman in the world. I then looked at Nate MacKinnon, one of the best players in the world. MacKinnon skates like he had the V12 engine, honestly. Like, he's like a Bugatti out there. You just can't catch him. He gets so much separation. I'd say it's a split between the Avs and the Flames in the West. And in the East, as you know, all 8 teams that made the playoffs, every one of them had 100 points
it's
or better.
Insane.
So
that is an insane stat.
It's wild. It's literally wild. We're going to do the NHL draft lottery momentarily at the NHL Network. It's going to air on ESPN tonight at 6, I think between 6 and 6:30 Eastern. And what's crazy about that, some people might be saying, oh, it's just a draft. Are you kidding me? Our league is so hyper-competitive. Look at the Eastern Conference right now. And that's how hyper-competitive it is. So on a night like tonight where you have the draft lottery, you know, this could very well have impact the immediate or near future of any franchise. So it makes it all the more compelling, man.
Kevin, can you explain that? And that is an amazing stat that I meant to bring up. You've got 8 teams with 100 or more points in the East alone. How do you explain that?
The way I really explain it is it's the competitive balance in our league. And I think what's really interesting is look at all the East players that we have, all the stars and superstars we have in the East, right? So, you know, you talk about everybody up in Toronto. You talk about Steven Stamkos and Hedman and Vasilevsky down in Tampa. Florida's got Barkov and Huberdeau, who had a franchise and league record-setting season. You go basically every team. Washington still has Ovi, Backstrom, Kuzi. So you go up and down the rosters, and you're like, stars. And to their credit, a lot of those aforementioned players have won and or are close to winning. And not only are they great individually, but they're team-first players. So when you have your superstars playing like lunch pail players in terms of their commitment, blue collar, their grit, being team first players, you know you're cooking with gas. And that's really what's happened with all 8 teams in the East. It's been impressive to watch.
I love that description you just had. Kevin Weeks joining us. One last thought. You mentioned the Rangers. So the Rangers had one of their best teams in years, but they've run into a Penguins team that has scored 7 goals in back-to-back games. They've got a 3-1 series lead. Kevin, what do you make of Sid at 34 and still crushing it? What do you make of the way he and the Penguins are playing right now, and what's their ceiling?
I mean, here's the thing with Sid, and getting to know Sid and having a pretty good relationship with Sid, I would say this. What I love about Sid is he's all hockey all the time. His whole life is structured around being great, being the best player he can be, and making the biggest contribution to his team daily, nightly, practice, workouts, recovery, you name it. He's all in. One of the best players in the history of the world. I think right now he's 6th in our league for sure. He's 6th all time in points in the Stanley Cup playoffs. And when you think of all the great players that have played, plus he has 1,400 regular season points, he's going to go down as one of the GOATs for sure. And that sets the tone. But, Romy, think about this. You've got Sid, Hall of Fame, 3 rings. Geno Malkin, Hall of Fame, 3 rings. Jeff Carter, maybe Hall of Fame, is a third-line center, 2 rings from L.A. So down the middle, they've got 8 Stanley Cup rings in their top 3 centers. Like, that's pretty unreal.
Does that help? Is that beneficial?
Yeah, right. Does that help? Exactly. So that's basically like having 3 of your wideouts that are Hall of Famers. You know what I mean? In your receiver's core on any team. Like, it's unheard of. So I got to say, that strike down the middle really helps them. But that game one in this series at Madison Square Garden, I was doing mini St. Louis. But that game one at the Garden was must-see TV. It's one of the most iconic games ever played at the Garden. And Pittsburgh was able to snatch that one 4-3. And, of course, Igor Shesterkin made 79 saves. Remember when MJ had 55 points at the Garden?
Yes, of course.
Shesterkin had 79 points. Like, it's one of the most incredible individual performances in the history of Madison Square Garden. But to Pittsburgh's credit, they're down to their third goalie, Louis Domingue, who's playing really well for them. They snatched that game, and really, that's the game that turned the series for me.
I know, it's amazing. For that guy to come off the bench ice cold and do what he had to do in that moment and to turn that series, it's just incredible. Like, Kevin, you can speak to that, right? How hard is that? As somebody who played goalie, you've lived that life your entire life. How hard is that to do?
It's so hard because the Stanley Cup playoff games are hyper-intense. You and I, when we visit during the playoffs, I tell you all the time, the rink's 200 by 85. In terms of dimensions. In the playoffs, it feels like it's 150 long by 50 wide. Hmm. You can't think. You can't breathe. It's so hyper-intense on every possession. So to come in cold off the bench, that's basically like saying, okay, heaven forbid, TB12 goes down. We are in the third quarter. We've got the ball. We're first in whatever, 30. And now you got to come off the bench and run the offense and try to win the game. And try to do that. Like, that's how difficult it is. So wild, because our sport and our position specifically, like quarterback, it's a very feel-intuitive position, right? It's so many subtleties in the movements and the biomechanics and your timing and your positioning and everything, your reads. Goalies have no margin for error. So what Louis Domingue has been able to do, in light of Casey DeSmith, who played really well as their two, and also in place of their starter, Tristan Jarry, who's an all-star this year. It's amazing what Domingue's done. But you got to give a lot of props to my boy Andy Kyoto, who's a goalie coach here in Pittsburgh, former NHL goalie himself. He's done a great job with their three goalies this year.
Hey, Kevin, one last thought. I agree with you. One last thought, just big picture. And you and I will talk this time of year, every year, no matter what. And I talked to Ray Ferraro last week. The rubber came on. It just seems like my particular audience, these are all great guys, you know this, but the audience seems like they're more into it now than in recent memory. Is it because we're on a bigger platform, or does it feel that way to you?
Yeah, of course. We're on a much bigger platform. I mean, I think it's great for our sport. I was talking to Deputy Commissioner Bill Daly about this, and Commissioner Bettman. Our league's where it deserves to be. It needs to be elevated on the proper pedestal relative to the league and to the sport and our amazing players and our great fans. And I think, if anything, I don't want to say it legitimized our sport by being back on Walt Disney and on ESPN and Hulu and ABC and, of course, on TNT, the Turner Company. But I don't want to say that it legitimizes us, but it kind of does. You know what I mean? Like, I can't tell you how many players I talk to and people in the business, coaches, GMs, owners, that are just raving about the fact that our games are where they should be. They're getting the coverage that they should in terms of the exposure on those platforms. And you know how players are. Players are competitive. Players hear this and they're like, hey, listen, I love Braun. I love Doncic. I love all these guys. I love TB12. I love all these guys, Ronaldo, Sir Lewis Hamilton. But, yo, we're in the league too. You know what I mean? Like, we need to be there. We want to showcase McDavid, Dreisaitl, Makar, McKinnon, Shesterkin, Panarin, Kaprizov. We want our players to continue to be household names as well. They're great at what they do, and they do it on ice, and they do it on skates. And we have some of the most passionate fans in the world of professional sports as well. So I think it's been great for our sport to be back on those two platforms. And, of course, you know, being on the NHL Network with 24-hour coverage as well. Everybody tunes in. It's on in every dressing room, every weight room. And the fans tell us that they're watching all the time, too. So we're just happy to be able to serve the fans, as are you. You know this. You're a Hall of Famer. You know what it takes. It's just a matter of bringing it to the fans every day, and that's an earned privilege.
That's it. And I love the game. I love the product, and I love the guys who play it. It's great. He will be on ESPN2's call for the Caps and Panthers. Game 5 tomorrow night, 7:30 p.m. NHL Network is airing live coverage before and after every single game with NHL Now and NHL Tonight. He is a broadcaster for the NHL Network, ESPN, and TSN. He is Kevin Weeks. Kevin, appreciate you so much. What a blast that was,
anytime.
But it always is, man.
Anytime,
thank you so much.
Man. Thank you so much for having me, man. Keep up the great work, Romy.
You too, Kevin. Appreciate you very much. Kevin Weeks. Guys in the game, too, appreciate it and the opportunity. Have you noticed literally every time we put on any analyst for that sport, you get that kind of energy, you get that kind of passion? The guys who play the game, the guys who do play that game, just different breed, different thing. And it is good to see that platform. And more people are seeing it. I've always said this. Every single year, going back how many years, that I know a lot of you did not grow up with it, don't watch it, don't get it, don't know it. And for years and years, I haven't said it in recent years, but years and years, I would say to you clones, if you don't watch hockey or you've never watched hockey or it's just not your thing, okay, fine. Turn it on in the playoffs. The first one of you that says, I did that, and then comes back to me and says, it's kind of like Javier's. The first one of you that comes back to me and says, I did it, Rome, it's not all that. It's not that good. It's not what you make it out to be. The next person who does that will be the first, because it is. It's almost not even fair for me to indoctrinate you to the NHL in the postseason, but if it's a way to get you in, I'll do it that way, because it's amazing. Like Javier's, which is where I went over the weekend. Like the Derby, you know, we're always trying to find ways to get new people to horse racing. It's always been the biggest challenge. If you watch the Derby and you saw the Derby this Saturday, that's a pretty good way to get into the sport. So I'll have that for you too. John Morosi is coming up in hour number three. We are wide open, though, for more than the next hour. Now would be a very good time to call. I'm going to give you my thoughts on Golden State last night. I want to give you my thoughts on the Derby, one of the most amazing things I've seen, not only in horse racing, but in all sports. All of that is ahead. How about a golden ticket? Can I give one of those things away? You have to earn it. I'm not going to just give it to you, but it's there. I've got a stack of them right there if you want one. Thank you, Alvin. So in the meantime, I got another question for you. I'm not sure if I've ever asked you this question before. Why is Old Trapper beef jerky so amazing? Why don't we start with the fact that it's a family business? I grew up in a family business. I know what that represents. And this is an amazing family which makes an amazing product. Amazing beef jerky. In fact, the best there is. Do not be fooled by other brands. All beef jerky is not one and the same. Make sure you choose Old Trapper. We can actually see the quality right through their iconic clear view packages. Every single bite of Old Trapper is tender and it's never tough because of the ingredients they use. Only the best ingredients. Plus, there are four mouth-watering flavors, so you've got a wide variety. Personally, I cannot choose. I like all four exactly the same, which is why I like the fact that they come in 4-ounce bags. That way I can get one of each. If you're partial to one over the other and you know exactly what you want, then take that big swing. Get the 18-ouncer. That way there's enough for the entire fam or the entire team or whoever you're rolling with, or maybe you want it all for yourself. If you do not see it, ask for Old Trapper by name, because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what's your beef?
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
All right, so a short segment. Let me reset you very quickly. I'm looking for some reaction here. I was not here yesterday because I had jury duty. And I don't want to say that I got out of it, but I will say because I didn't. I didn't get out of it. I didn't try to get out of it. See me winking? I didn't try to get out of it. I served. They did release us before lunchtime, which was pretty amazing. However, I might not be, quote, out of the woodwork yet. Strangely enough, I have an address in LA County. I have an address in Orange County. They would like me to serve in both counties. I would argue, at least from a layman's perspective, that why would I do that? I have an address, a mailing address in LA, but I don't live in LA. Is there an attorney that wants to help me with this? Actually, I have an attorney. Don't call. Anyway,
don't do that.
I did not get out of jury duty. I served, but they released us before lunch, and there was applause in the jury room, not in the courtroom, because we never actually made it into a courtroom. So that's pretty cool. Pretty cool. Hi, Jim. You know I love when you talk hockey, no matter who the guest is, but Kevin Weeks is hands down the best analyst you have every time. So insightful and personable. Great segment. War of the Calgary Flames, getting that jungle karma. Belby in Calgary. Belby, be honest. Is he your favorite, or is he your favorite because he was giving your team a lot of love? Or both? Kevin Weeks is great. In terms of, you're asking me to pick my favorite when some of the best analysts in any sport are in the NHL for two reasons. Number one, there's some of the best guys who play that game, and all of these analysts who play the game. And number two, frankly, it's not the NFL. It's not the NBA. It's not even Major League Baseball. Hockey needs to try a little bit harder, and all those guys do, and they know it. So I am glad to see them on the big platform. Hey, Rome, who's the new guy? Regards, annoying guy at the office when you take a day off. Eric in Castle Rock. That's why I came in at the very top of the program and said, look who's back, the new guy. Look, even my guys, and they're well-meaning and well-intentioned, always say to me, welcome back, if I've missed one day. I mean, it's one thing to hit me with the welcome back when I have one of my two-week vacations in the summertime. But Alvy will do it. Chalk will do it. Rich just kind of mutters to himself when he comes in, so I don't get that from him. He's more just happy to be above ground and, hey, boss, where's the Swiss miss? But Chalk's like, yo, welcome back. I was like, welcome back, Jim. Guys, I was gone one day for jury duty. We welcome back from what? The three-day weekend. Hitman Canadian, quote, if you'll be my court guard, I can be your long-last pal. I can call you Giannis. And Giannis, when you call me, you can call me Al. Signed, Paul Simon. Let's try that again, Alvin. I'll play along. Go ahead. If you'll be my court guard, I can be your long-lost pal. I can call you Giannis. Giannis, when you call me, you can call me Al. See? Just not afraid, man. Not afraid. What are they going to do? Take me out of the Hall of Fame? Sign Paul Simon. Hey, listen, if Paul Simon is listening and wants to send me lyrics of his song, how can I not sing along? Hell yeah. JJ Sportmo. Good morning, Jim, and welcome back. Did you reach out to the owner of Rich Strike and see if they by chance got too busy to get a bet in on their horse? Did the Derby winner miss the race while at the supermarket? Idiot. Yeah, no, dude, they were there. They were there.
You're an idiot.
Let's not confuse the Kentucky Derby with, frankly, it was a stake race. And we were entered in that stake race. And I've owned how badly I messed that up. That was on par with me saying, no, thank you, Robert Plant. I'll get you next time. But no, I would not have done that if I had a Derby horse. By the way, we sold that horse. I know, it's a crazy game. We own that horse in a syndicate, and she won the race at 70-1. But our plan was, yes, James Kelly, really. Our plan was we were going to sell babies from the syndicate, and that was one of our babies prior to that big win. And the thing about horse racing, which is so tough sometimes, tougher for me than for other people. Other people don't really give a damn. Frankly, it's widgets. I've told the story a million times. Somebody said to me early on, your biggest problem with being in this game is you fall in love with every one of the horses. To which I always respond with, the reason I'm in the game is I fall in love with all of the horses. However, it is a business. And most people lose a lot of money in the business. It's really hard to make money in that business. I would never advise anybody to go into it as a business. I'm just being honest. So when you can take money off of the table, you have to, or you cannot stay in the business. You can't survive in the business. I learned that the hard way. So we did. And we sold that horse, and it went to an extremely prominent owner who loves the horse, and now they'll take their chances. I played this game both ways. I've bought horses where people want to take money off the table. We famously bought a horse from, of all people back in the day, Wes Welker. We bought a horse from Wes Welker. They had a filly by the name of Gypsy Robin. And the horse was with Wesley Ward. And we bought the horse, paid a ton of money for this horse. She got hurt, then she came back, and she ran well for us. And I can remember him hitting me up on Twitter one year and saying, when are you going to run her? Are you going to just keep working her? I'm like, Wekla, she's close. And she won a stake at Del Mar, and then we ran her one last time. We knew that she was going to go to sale and be retired and become a broodmare or a mama. So we ran her one last time in Kentucky against some of the best in the world, and she ran her absolute eyeballs out and came in second. It was amazing. But that's just the game. You know, you have to take money off the table. Wekla did very well when he sold us that horse. And then when we sold that horse, we had some fun with her. She was hurt, but we won a stake race in Del Mar, ran a huge race in Kentucky, and went back in the ring, and then we sold her for what we paid for her. So almost an even deal, minus carry and costs. So it's all part of the game. It's a fascinating game. It's the best thing in the world and the hardest thing in the world. When we come back, I want to get into... I can't even describe to you how insane and how unusual it was that that group won that derby with that horse. It's so much more insane than it even appears on the surface, 80-1, and where that horse came from in the race to win the race. And by the way, if you want to do something interesting before I get to my take, go online and find the overhead view of the replay. And to see what this horse had to do and navigate and how much ground it had to make up, I mean, it literally was like a video game. It was incredible. All of that still ahead. And how about a phone call? Like, no, I'm getting a lot of phone calls. Phone calls that make a difference. Phone calls that can win a golden ticket. That would be amazing. The Smack Off is June 28th or 24th. My bad. June 24th, edition 28. Invite only.
My bad.
$5,000 to the winning call, as always. And a lifetime exemption for every Smack Off going forward. Alvin's world premiere of his promo not coming up. Not anytime soon. But I got a sports update for you right here. Here it is.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Not all beef jerky is the same. Old Trapper's original old-fashioned teriyaki, hot and spicy, and peppered all come in 4-ounce bags. So you can sample different flavors to find the best one for you. Ask for Old Trapper by name because no other jerky compares to Old Trapper. What is your beef? All right, so to finish the thought, because it happened on Saturday and tomorrow is way past, too late. If you have not picked up your jaw from Saturday's Kentucky Derby, you are not the only one, point blank. I mean, what happened at Churchill Downs in the Run for the Roses is something that we may never see ever again. Like, literally almost in any sport. It really was one of one bleep. For context, Friday morning, a horse with one career win named Rich Strike wasn't even in the Derby. And by Saturday night, that 80-1 long shot, Rich Strike, had two career wins, one being the Kentucky Bleeping Derby.
It's two for me.
There's not enough time left in this show for me to explain how insane that is. That horse wasn't even in the field, had one win, and now has two, and one of them is the Derby. I'm telling you, you may never, ever see anything like that ever again. And that in and of itself is more remarkable than the horse being 80-1 and winning. And then the way the horse won was insane. After an opening half mile, Rich Strike was ahead of exactly two horses. Two horses in a 20-field horse race, meaning this late ad, who had not won any of his last five races, would have to kick in his closing run and navigate through a bigger crowd than he or any horse is ever going to see. And by the way, that horse was a $30,000 claimer. This is some pretty low-level stuff. A $30,000 claimer. In other words, anybody could have had that horse, could have claimed that horse for 30 grand. And he's in the field running against six- and seven-figure animals with the finest pedigrees and among the very best in the entire world. Best breed, best trainers, best jockeys, richest owners. And in no way do I mean any disrespect. Normally I say no disrespect and somebody's being disrespected. I really mean it. No disrespect to these connections of Rich Strike, who I could not be happier for. But they're none of those things. The richest, the best, the most successful, the best pedigreed. They'd be the first ones to tell you that. I'd be the first one to admit prior to that race, I hadn't heard of any of them. Hell, the jockey on that horse had never even won a graded stake race prior to winning arguably the hardest race in the world with an absolutely astonishing ride. I mean, the whole thing is so insane. I'm trying to think of an analogy to explain how unlikely it all was. It'd be like some driver, some journeyman driver running on some super low-level circuit in auto racing on the dirt tracks, just showing up at the Daytona 500 in some rig that he and a few buddies soldered together and somehow won the race against the best drivers and the best owners and the best technology that the sport has to offer. It literally is not only one of the most unlikely things that I've ever seen in horse racing, but in all of sports, in all the years I've done this. It was that much of a holy bleep moment. And especially the way the race set up. Summer is Tomorrow led that race at first in suicidal type fractions. I mean, they were running so fast up front in such a long race, like crazy fractions. 21.78, and then the half mile was running 45.36. That's code for gassing himself, especially in a race of that distance. A distance many of them have never run before and never will ever again. Let me give you an example. We ran straight up G in a win and you're in derby race in New Mexico. It was a tad shorter than the Derby. He went out in similar fashion, burning up the track on the lead and gassed out terribly. He's fine, but we gave him time off after that race, and he was nowhere near the money. So we know that he doesn't want that distance. When you see horses running that fast on the lead in a race that far, pretty safe to assume they're going to back up and they're going to set it up for the closers. But even then, one of the other major challenges for the Derby is you never see a field that big ever again. That's a crazy amount of traffic. Something else that a lot of them have never dealt with. And as a result of that track and that distance, they get a ton of dirt or mud kicked back in their face. Something else horses normally don't react well to. How many of us would, right? So all these factors are going against this horse. It's a $30,000 claimer. It's in a distance that most of them have never run and may never run ever again. They're in traffic they've never been in. They're getting dirt kicked in their face where that's never happened before. That's why you see the jockeys, and the jockeys have all these goggles on. They have multiple goggles. They take them off during the race. So at the three-quarter mile mark, the cream starts to separate, right? Epicenter and Zandon take control in what looked like a battle for the ages in the home stretch. Two favorites doing exactly what they're supposed to do. Exude class, separate from the others, and give us a match race. You know, think of Shared Belief and California Chrome and the San Antonio Stakes headed for home, head to head, and completely running away from the field. That's how this looked like it was going to be. Until Rich Strike started weaving in and out of traffic and then got shot out of a bleeping cannon, swallowing up enormous chunks of real estate and taking aim on the allegedly much, much classier leaders. And these leaders have no idea that this anonymous rando has gotten to the rail and is closing like a freaking freight train. Again, if you want to see something amazing, go find an overhead replay of the race and it's one of the most amazing things I've ever seen. Hell, listen to the call again. Even Larry Kalmus, who's a legend, did not see Rich Strike coming up the rail until very late. And then, like everybody else, he lost his proverbial poo.
Epicenter has taken the lead as they arrive into the final furlong. Sandin is coming after him. Epicenter and Sandin, these two, stride for stride. Simplification down the outside is next. They're coming down to the wire. Epicenter's Sandin. Rich Strike is coming up on the inside. Oh, my goodness. The longest shot has won the Kentucky Derby. Rich Strike has done it in a stunning, unbelievable upset.
I mean, absolutely.
Rich Strike. Lightning strike. That's one of the biggest upsets in the history of the Kentucky Derby.
No, in the history of sports, really. I mean, bleeping goosebumps. I mean this. I watched it again this morning. I don't know any of these people. I've never spoken to any of these connections. I've never even heard of any of these people. And I watched that race this morning, and I have no connection to any of them, and I got absolute bleeping goosebumps. I mean, some of the most surreal moments of my entire life have been in horse racing. I cannot even begin to imagine what it must have felt like to be the owner, the trainer, the jockey, the groom, or anybody else associated with this horse. It was one of the most amazing things I have ever seen. Literally, I got chills watching it again this morning, even on Tuesday. So, like, maybe you don't give a bleep about horse racing, but even if you don't, you have to admit that was one of the coolest things you've ever seen. And that's exactly what sports, not horse racing, but sports are all about, right? The underdog coming from the back of the pack as an 80-1 dog to beat a couple of badass, expensive, classy, pedigreed horses that were supposed to win. The biggest underdog since 1913. Since I wasn't around then, I had to ask Rit what it was like the next time that happened. Last time it happened. You know, as evidence, you think of what? The biggest underdog ever, biggest upset ever, Buster Douglas. 42-1 when he iced Iron Mike. Rich Strike was nearly double that. And a lot of you want to know why he was biting on the pony. I want to get into that when we come back. Stay tuned. That's coming up next.